Welcome back to Two Sisters and a TV, the classic TV podcast, where we remember and celebrate all things and everything classic TV. Today we're going to continue our look at the life of Bob Crane. Now there's one thing I have to clear up before I go any further. My sister called me out on this. I said in the last episode that when the pilot for Hogan's Heroes was shot, that Bob sent copies around to former POWs and vets of World War II to get their feedback to make sure that no one would be offended by the show. And I said that I did not know if he had signed on to do the show yet or not. So she pointed out to me, she called me out, she said, don't you think since he was in the pilot, that meant that he signed up to do the show? Yes, that is very, very true. Very, very true. So I had to clear that up before I go any further. Immediately had to get that cleared up. Also wanted to clear up that Bob was in the Connecticut Army National Guard from 1948 to 1950. Also forgot to mention that he was also in the Connecticut and Norwalk Symphony Orchestras back in the 40s. And also forgot to mention, in regard to Hogan's Heroes premise, the fact that, as we said before, the show was set in a POW camp. Some of the lead actors on that show, Warner Klimperer, John Banner, Leon Askin, and Howard Kane, were all Jewish. Robert Clary was in a concentration camp. He wrote a book about his experience, as a matter of fact. It's one we highly recommend. It's titled From the Holocaust to Hogan's Heroes, the Autobiography of Robert Clary. It was published in 2001. And we definitely recommend reading that book. Another person on the show, within the show, that was Jewish was the executive producer of the show, Edward Feldman. So that has a lot to say about what the show was really about, the real premise of it. But something I also forgot to mention about Colonel Hogan. Colonel Hogan was a ladies' man. I mentioned that Bob Crane and Colonel Hogan were a lot alike. They were also alike in the fact that Bob was a ladies' man. Speaking of Bob, as we said last time, he was really enjoying his time on Hogan's Heroes. He appeared in an episode of What's My Line in late 1966. That December, I watched it the other night on YouTube. I did not know it existed. He appeared on The Lucy Show with Lucille Ball and Gil Gordon, also in 1966. And Bob was, as we said last time, very friendly guy, loved to sign autographs, very outgoing and very warm. He was known for doing his own, getting his own laundry. He would go to the bank. He was known for going to the bank in his Hogan attire and waiting in line to, make his, transactions. He also, when he had to go on trips, he would also either ask his son, eldest son Bobby, to drive him to the airport, or he'd take himself. And while Dick Van Dyke had a Jaguar XKE, he had a Cadillac. So yeah, he was a pretty down-to-earth guy. He and his family lived in Tarzana. So yeah, he definitely was a very down-to-earth fellow. But as I was also saying, he was also a ladies' man. Despite the fact that he had been married to Anne for a long time, they had three kids. Bob Crane, definitely a ladies' man. And one cast member I failed to mention last time was Cynthia Lynn. In the first season of Hogan's Heroes, she portrayed Kling's secretary, Helga. Well, it was during the run of the first season of the show that she and Bob embarked on a torrid, passionate, extramarital affair. They would meet at their makeup man's house, and they were very, 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 very involved in this affair. Cynthia actually had fallen pretty deeply in love with Bob. She, too, was married. Like Bob was. And when her husband found out about the affair, he gave her an ultimatum. Either leave the show or we get a divorce. So reluctantly, after the first season, she left the show. She really did not want to leave. She enjoyed working on the show, enjoyed the cast, and of course she enjoyed Bob. But she did not want to lose her marriage, so she left the show in 1966. Unfortunately for her, her marriage still came to an end. She and her husband still divorced a few years later. She never got over leaving the show, and I don't think she ever got over Bob Crane either. So her replacement was another really hot blonde by the name of Sigrid Valdez. Her real name was Patty Olson, and in this episode going forward, she will be referred to as Patty. Patty was Klink's new secretary, Hilda. She joined the show at the beginning of the second season. And after a while, she and Bob began to have an affair. Now, Patty was not married. Patty was a widow. She had a young daughter named Melissa. And somewhere along the way, in the midst of this affair, Patty and Bob fell in love and got married. Bob left Anne, moved out of the house. They shared together in Tarzana. And after 20 years of marriage, they divorced. 21 years of marriage, they divorced. And he married Patty on the set of Hogan's Heroes the same year in 1970. Now, it's been said for years that Richard Dawson was Bob's best man at the wedding. Well, I watched Patty and Bob's wedding not too long ago. And although Richard Dawson was in attendance, I saw him seated next to John Banner smoking a cigarette. He was not the best man. Because I saw, of course, Patty and Bob, and then, of course, the minister who married them. Patty's daughter, Melissa, was the flower girl. Patty's sister was the matron of honor. And the one standing next to Bob was actually Eddie Feldman, the executive producer of Hogan's Heroes. So he was the best man at the wedding, not Richard Dawson. I revisited that relationship, by the way, of Bob and Richard Dawson. They definitely did have... There was tension between the two of them. I think it was blown out of proportion, like I said last time. But there was tension there. Now, some claim Richard Dawson did try out for the part of Hogan, and he did not get it because he had an accent. And he, you know, they wanted Colonel Hogan to be American. They didn't think that Richard Dawson was going to be able to pull off the American accent. So Bob got the part while he, you know, got the part of Newkirk. But there was tension between the two of them. Matter of fact, in the letter that Bob wrote to Richard Dawson when Hogan's Heroes ended, as I said last time, he wrote letters to all of the principal cast members on the show after it was canceled. In the letter he wrote to Richard, he did mention to him that, you know, we didn't always see eye to eye. So he did acknowledge the fact that they did have, you know, clashes between the two of them when they were on, you know, working together on the show. But it was, as I said, during this time and through Richard Dawson that he met John Henry Carpenter. John Carpenter was a salesman for Sony, and he had all access to all of the new electronic equipment that was just coming out, and Bob was buying all of it. Now, as I mentioned, not only did he have an affair with Cynthia Lynn and then with Patty, but Bob was having multiple affairs during this time. He became a big star from doing Hogan's Heroes. He also was in the movie, by the way, The Wicked Dreams of Paula Schultz that was released in 1968. Other Hogan's Heroes cast members were also in that movie, like John Banner, Werner Klimperer, and Leon Askin. He also was in the TV film Arsenic and Old Lace, which was from 1969. But, Bob was having a lot of affairs with a lot of women because a lot of women, I mean, he was a very attractive man. He was very handsome. As I said, very friendly, outgoing, charming, just a very fun-loving guy. And women were attracted to him. I watched the Password episode. I was telling you about I watched Password episodes he was in a couple of weeks ago. Well, there was a young lady who was his partner. She was a pretty little brunette girl. And she kept touching on Bob. And, you know, she was very attracted to him, obviously. And she even leaned over and gave him a hug and kissed him on the cheek at one point. But she kept touching him. you know, kept looking at him. You could tell that she definitely had a crush on him. Bob, to my surprise, was uncomfortable. He looked visibly uncomfortable, you know, with her actions. I guess he was one of those men who liked to take the lead when it came to pursuing a woman, maybe, but he didn't really feel comfortable, obviously, you know, with her touching on him and, you know, kissing him and things like that. But Bob was, like I said, sleeping with a lot of women at this point. To the point where one day he called Richard Dawson aside. They were on a break, and he took him to his car. He took Richard Dawson to his car, and on the back seat of his car were literally hundreds and hundreds of Polaroid pictures of nude women. So he was, like I said, really, like I said, having a lot of affairs on the side. As a matter of fact, when Patty, and we didn't know this until doing our research, Patty knew that Bob was a, you know, he slept with a lot of women before she married him. She said that she knew that Bob loved her and he didn't love any of these other women, that he really was just using them and that they were the equivalent of toilet paper. And she said, how can you be jealous of toilet paper? She must have really loved him. She must have really, really loved him to have married him and knowing that he was having all of these other affairs with all these other women. Well, Carpenter and Bob, you know, they were in the electronics stuff together, and Bob was not only having affairs, but he was taking pictures of women that he slept with. You know, he would photograph them. He'd ask them, you know, hey, you know, first of all, he would take pictures of them with their clothes on. I've seen Bob's work. I'm not going to lie about it. We've seen Bob's work because I used to know a whole lot of fellow Bob Crane fans, you know, back in the day. And they would send me stuff through the mail. They would send me all kinds of stuff via physical mail and email. And so we've seen Bob's work, some of it. And so, yeah, a lot of the women, you know, like I said, he would ask them, may I photograph you? And they would have their clothes on initially. And then he would ask them, you know, let me see you in your underwear. So he'd photograph them in their underwear. And then he would ask them, you know, could he take pictures of them when they were, you know, in the nude? And so he had all of these pictures that he was taking of these women with all the newest cameras that were on the market that he would get from Carpenter. And so he was taking, like I said, all kinds of pictures, and he was photographing. You know, Bob liked to photograph and document everything, and this was no exception. So he was photographing all the women he would sleep with. He'd put pictures in thick scrapbooks, and he'd show the scrapbooks off to anyone who would, you know, pay attention. After Hogan's Heroes ended, Bob had a difficult time getting work. Because he had become typecast as Colonel Hogan. I watched the episode of Tattletales from 1974. He and Patty were on the show for a week. And Bert Convy, the host of the show, introduced him as Colonel Hogan. Bob was a little, you could tell, he was put off by that. Because he said that he had a brand new show coming up called Second Start. And he said, well, maybe, hopefully, you'll be able to introduce me as something other than Colonel Hogan. He was proud of his time on Hogan's Heroes and proud of his Colonel Hogan connection, but he wanted to do more than just be known as Colonel Hogan. So he was guest starring on TV shows like The Doris Day Show and Night Gallery, Laugh-In, Police Woman. Later down through the decade, Ellery Queen, Quincy, Nancy Drew Mysteries, The Love Boat. But he really wanted to have a TV series again. It was during this period that Disney gave him a call, contacted him. They thought he'd be a really good leading man for some of their movies. And so they cast him in a movie called Super Dad, released in 1973. Super Dad, not the best movie. Some people like it, but I think that it was just overly corny. He portrayed an overprotective dad named Charlie McCready, and Charlie's daughter is growing up, and, you know, she's in love. Her boyfriend was portrayed by Kurt Russell. Charlie's wife was portrayed by Barbara Rush. And Charlie's just trying to be the super cool dad, you know. He's out there surfing and he's making a fool of himself. The movie, again, is just not very good. It bombed at the box office. And it was during this period when he was working on Super Dad, Bob began to take his photographs, his scrapbooks, to the set. And he would show the crew pictures of the naked women that he was having sex with. And of course, you know, people talk. And so it got back to the ex at the, you know, the suits, the execs at Disney. Bob Crane's what? Bob Crane's down on the set doing what? And so they were like, okay, this guy's a liability. You know, we can't work with this guy. So after Super Dad wrapped, they did not hire Bob to be in any more movies. Bob did one more Disney film called Gus, released in 1976, but he was not the star of Gus. He had a very small part in it as a sportscaster named Pepper Pot. And I remember watching Gus for the first time, and I was like, where's Bob Crane? It said that Bob is in this movie, but where is he? He finally shows up in the latter part of the film. The film also starred Edward Asner, Don Knotts, Dick Butkus, Harold Gould, Dick Van Patten. It's a really funny movie. But he lost the opportunity to be in more Disney films because word was beginning to really leak out about his hidden lifestyle, if you will. You know, the Inquirer, National Inquirer was getting to get wind of it. Word was beginning to leak out that Bob would go to strip clubs, he would go to bars, he would go to discos, he would go to nightclubs. He and Carpenter, whom he nicknamed Carpy, they would go and they would pick up women. Now, Bob had no trouble picking up women. Bob was a very handsome man. He was a TV star. Like I said, he had a great personality. So he easily picked up women. Carpenter was the opposite of Bob. Carpenter was also married, by the way. He didn't have the personality, the looks that Bob did. And Bob decided he'd help Carpy out. He would introduce him to these women as his manager. And then they were impressed. Well, okay, he's not bad. He's not good looking. He doesn't have the best personality. But hey, he's Bob Crane's manager. So, okay, so that, you know, made him elevated in the eyes of these ladies. So they would, you know, go off together. Bob and Carpy would pick up women and they would go off together and they would have sex. They would do all kinds of stuff. They had all kinds of sexual activities going on. Bob also, during this period, began to buy a lot of video recording equipment. Video cassette recorders, cameras, tripods, everything. So Bob wasn't just taking pictures anymore of the women that he would sleep with. He was making movies of his sexual activities with these women. He and Carpy and the women would participate in sex videos. So by this point, Bob had become a full-blown, he had developed a full-blown sexual addiction by this point. He was a sex addict. He was addicted to sex. But let's really, you know, let's go ahead and look at the full scope of Bob's addiction, because people, that's one of the first things they want to say when the name Bob Crane comes up. Well, he was a sex addict. Okay, yeah, he was a sex addict. Yeah, absolutely. But let's look at the whole scope of his addiction. Let's clear some things up that are floating around that people are erroneously saying about it. Number one, Bob did not drug anyone. He didn't force anyone. He did not assault anyone. He didn't force anyone. He didn't traffic anybody. He didn't make any woman have sex with him. These women were willing to have sex with Bob. They were willing, and he didn't force anyone to do anything against their will. So we can just straighten that part out and clear that up right now. Because I read some comments that, many, many comments down through the years that say otherwise. But no, Bob, like I said, did not force anyone to sleep with him. Number two, Bob did not fool around with any children. everyone that Bob Crane had sex with was a full-fledged adult. He was not like Roman Polanski. He didn't mess around with little young girls, thankfully. That, too, is something that I have read down through the years. He's been accused of that. Not true. So let's get that cleared up. And then number three, word has it that Bob was taping these women without their consent. It was the 1970s. Have you seen the video equipment from the 1970s? It was big. It was bulky. It was huge. There is no way that you could hide that equipment. And with the pictures and the videos that we've seen, these ladies were mugging it up with the camera. They were smiling at the camera, posing for the camera. They knew what they were doing. Now, I heard somewhere that Bob was putting cameras in the furniture, he and Carpenter. And I mean, maybe that's possible, but I'm going on what I've seen. What I've seen, pictures and footage that I've seen. Normally, I don't, that type of stuff, I don't watch that type of stuff, you know, sex videos and sex nude men, women. It does nothing for me. It does nothing for my sister either. We're not into that. We only looked at this stuff, is the only reason why we looked at this stuff down through the years. We haven't seen it in a long time, by the way. It's been a good 20 some years since we've seen any of this type of stuff. But the only reason we looked at it is because it was a Bob Crane. And our curiosity got the best of us. And like I said, I had, you know, other people sending me this stuff. And of course, you know, I shared it with her. We, you know, we checked it out. But these ladies were fully aware of what they were doing. They were fully aware they were being photographed. They were fully aware of being taped. So it's really time out to stop lying about this addiction, lying on Bob Crane. It's time to go ahead and stop doing that and go ahead and tell the truth about it. That's what we're doing right now here today within this episode. But yes, Bob had a full-blown addiction, and it was really, really out of control. I mean, it was really taking up a lot of his life, a lot of his time. But it was during this time that Bob did get a shot at another TV series. Now, the weekly TV show came along. The one that he mentioned to Britt Convy on Tattletales was originally titled Second Start. The show was a Mary Tyler Moore production, and the show was about Bob Wilcox, a middle-aged man who was an insurance salesman. He decides to just give all that up, and he wants to go to medical school and become a doctor. It was pretty groundbreaking because in the 70s, people just kind of didn't do that in middle age. These days, it's a very common thing. It's very common to see someone middle age. Oh, okay, you were a lawyer for 20 years. Now you want to go and open up an ice cream shop. Okay, cool. Good luck with that. That's great. But in the 70s, that was just something that was really unheard of. So in that way, it was a groundbreaking show. The show, again, had a fellow Bob Crane fan, this girl that I used to know, sent me several episodes on video. It was not a bad show. It was pretty funny. The only thing about the show was it did need a better supporting cast. That was Bob's main complaint about the show. By the way, it was renamed the Bob Crane Show. I think the show left its Second Start, to be honest. That had a better ring to it than the Bob Crane Show, in my opinion. But they needed a better cast of supporting players, like Sanford and Son. The show, of course, you know, starred Fred and Lamont, but they had Aunt Esther, Grady, Rollo, Hoppy and Smitty, Donna. They had a great set of supporting cast members. Same thing with the Bob Newhart Show and the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Well, Bob Crane's show was missing that. I mean, the one thing that Bob kept saying is that he didn't have a Bill Daly, like on the Bob Newhart Show. Howard Borden was, you know, Bob's best friend. And, of course, he was portrayed by Bill Daly. And that was Bob's main complaint. He didn't have Bill Daly. And that's true. He needed a better supporting, you know, cast. And then also, that show definitely needed to be on a different night. The time slot for it was terrible. It was on opposite the Waltons, which in 1975 was a powerhouse. So it really just did not stand a chance. And after 3 months, it was canceled. The critics were brutal to the show. They were very, very harsh to Bob as well. Like I said, I've seen an episode of this show. One episode actually guest starred John Ritter. But it was not that bad of a show. It just needed some work. Needed to be retooled a bit, but it wasn't that bad. So Bob was really discouraged by what happened with the Bob Crane show and the fact that he just couldn't get parts, said he was typecast. So my sister and I talked about this. This might have what helped to fuel his addiction, you know, because he would go around, for example, let's say, okay, Bob hit, you know, because he had to work. He had to support a wife. He had kids to support. He had to no doubt pay alimony to Anne, his ex-wife. He had bills to pay. So he got a play together called Beginner's Luck, and he hit the dinner theater circuit with it, which dinner theater was definitely a step down. Unfortunately, it was a step down to hit dinner theater. But he had to pay. He had bills to pay. So he would go on the road and he would do Beginner's Luck. He directed it and he also starred in it. And so he'd be out there on the road, and Carpenter would go across the country, and he would, you know, do sales, you know, nationally. And so he would, you know, do lots of his sales in the cities where Bob was doing Beginner's Luck. And that was definitely a time when they were out there, you know, making a lot of videos, taking a lot of pictures, having a, you know, a lot of liaisons with other women. We talked about the fact that probably because Bob was so unhappy in his career, the addiction was kind of an outlet for him. He kind of was like, well, you know, I'm not doing really anything with my career. I'm not happy with that. Hey, look, I scored this, you know, scored with this really great looking chick in Seattle. Because Bob would be on the road, and let's say, you know, he's in the hotel room, and let's say the maintenance man is passing by. Hey, buddy, you got a minute? There's something I really want to show you. Come on here and take a break. Take the load off. Hey, yeah. Hey, hi, I'm Bob Crane. And I want you to, you know, check out, you know, check this out. And he would show his scrapbooks to, you know, to the maintenance man. Hey, man, I scored with this girl in Nebraska. Oh, I met this one in New Orleans. Oh, this one, I was with her in Portland. Isn't she hot? Isn't she gorgeous? Check out the body that she's got. Seemed like a point of validation in a way, to be honest. That's what it kind of seemed like. And you know, he was, I mean, very, very open with his movies, his pictures. He was not hiding this. It's almost like he kind of didn't even realize just what he was doing. He knew what he was doing, but it's kind of like he didn't really realize the effect that it was having upon him, you know, his career and upon him as a person, how people were looking at him with, you know, as he would show off this stuff. According to his youngest son, Scotty, Carol O'Connor was a neighbor, and he would invite Carol over to the house, and they would go down in Bob's basement and they watch Bob's videos. He's also showing his pictures and videos to Patty Duke. So he would show this stuff to anybody. He would let his eldest son, Bobby, see this stuff. Richard Dawson's eldest son, Mark, said that he saw the stuff when he was around 17. Even his youngest son, Scott, because after Bob and Patty got married, they had a child, Scott, born the following year. They also adopted a daughter named Anna Marie, as well. But, Bob was even letting Scotty, who was a very small child, see this stuff. Scott has said that he was as young as 2 years old, and he remembered seeing pictures of naked women in his dad's scrapbooks and in his dad's basement. He would see videos of naked women. So he was even letting his little boy see this stuff. So that's really how out of control that he was. I just honestly, according to Bobby, Bob's eldest son, Bob was always like a big kid anyway. And I just honestly, from what I've read and from what I've been able, what we've researched and looked into, I just don't even think he realized how bad that this stuff was making him look to other people. That he was really looking really out of control. because I watched an interview that was done with Gavin McLeod. You know, Gavin McLeod, you know, Murray Slaughter, the Mary Tyler Moore Show, the Captain on the Love Boat. He was in a couple of episodes of Hogan's Heroes back in the 60s, and he was asked about his time on the show. And he was asked specifically about Bob. And he said, oh, yeah, well, he was okay, but I really enjoyed working with Werner and John Banner, Richard Dawson, and all the other guys on the show. Then he came back to Bob and he said, you know, Bob was gracious. He was very charming. There was definitely an element about him. It was very, you know, appealing, very charismatic. And then he said that one night they ran into him, he and his wife, Gavin and his wife ran into Bob. And Bob asked them, hey, I've got these really great home movies that I would love for y'all to come and see. You know, you want to come and, you know, watch these movies with me? You want to come check out my home movies? And Gavin and his wife, also her name also was also Patty, they said, well, no, we don't really have the time for that. Come to find out that the home movies he wanted to show them were his sex videos. So, yeah, Bob, like I said, was really, really, he had really gone down a dark path. Some claim that not only was it the fact that, you know, he was frustrated about his career, but some claim that also Carpenter was kind of urging this stuff at the same time, which maybe he was. Maybe he was urging it on as well. Maybe the fact that, you know, Carpy was his constant companion, maybe that was also fueling the addiction. That is possible. Personally, I wish that Bob would have gone back to radio. He didn't want to go back into radio. He wanted to stay a TV actor. He would do some radio spots here and there, but he refused to go back to radio full time. I would have loved to see him go back into radio because he was so good at it. And then he could have waited for a really good TV role to come along and then gone back into TV. But obviously he chose not to do that. You know, I think this episode is going to end up being a three-parter. I think that this is going to be a three-part episode. Let's go ahead and make it a three-part episode. We will conclude the episode either later today or tomorrow for sure. Because we do have to get into more about Bob Crane, and I don't think we're going to have time to do it on this episode because we've talked so much about his addiction and about his career that we haven't had time. You know, we don't want to rush through anything, so we will leave it here for now. And we will conclude the episode next time. Like I said, either we'll conclude it today or we'll conclude it tomorrow. But like I said, Bob, very, like I said, frustrated with what was going on with his career. And he was more involved with Carpy and in his addiction than ever before. And it was during this time that Patty had enough. And she fought for divorce in December of 1977. He had just gotten back from Chicago with beginner's luck, gotten off the plane, and he was asked by a gentleman, are you Bob Crane? And of course, he assumed that the guy wanted an autograph, so he was getting out a pen. So the guy instead served him with divorce papers, and Bob was devastated. He was devastated by the fact that Patty filed for divorce. I think the reason why Patty did that was because she found out that Bob had been showing his sexual collection to Scotty. And she didn't take that very well, which is totally understandable. You know, you're showing Bobby, who was an adult, you're showing him your stuff. That's one thing. But you're showing it to a little kid, a little 3-4-year-old boy. That was unacceptable, and no doubt that was what caused the breaking point for her and caused her to file for divorce. But it was during all of this time, despite the fact that Bob was so caught up in his addiction, and it was really, really wreaking havoc on every area of his life, Bob was still very much involved in philanthropy. This was something we didn't know anything about, but Bob was very, very committed to charity. He did a lot of events, even before Hogan's Heroes. He was very involved in charity events. He was actually, he judged talent contests. He was master of ceremonies for various organizations. And this, of course, was before he even, like I said, left radio. He was at one point the Tarzana Senior Ambassador of Goodwill. And speaking of talent contests, he's the one who discovered Marilyn McCoo on a TV show called Talent Scouts back in 1965. Now, for some of you, you'll know Marilyn McCoo as having been a part of the Fifth Dimension. For others of you, you'll remember that she hosted Solid Gold back in the early 80s. Well, he was the one who discovered her, like I said, on Talent Scouts. Bob was very, like I said, involved in charity work. He volunteered with the U.S. Armed Forces Radio Network, also Operation Entertainment, the Cystic Fibrosis Fund Drive, the Easter Seals, the Arthritis Foundation, the Rheumatism Foundation, and he was also hosting telethons during this time with the United Cerebral Palsy. He hosted the United Cerebral Palsy telethon on a regular basis. We did not know that. We would love to see some of those telethons that he hosted because I'm sure he did a fantastic job as host. We've seen pictures, but we've never seen, you know, any video as of yet of him actually hosting. But I know he must have done an amazing job with that personality of his. He went back to Connecticut several times to work on the logo portion of the United Cerebral Palsy telethons as well. So not only did he do these telethons nationally, but he did them locally in Connecticut. And according to Gary Owens, he actually said these words about Bob. When the authors of the definitive biography were doing their research, he told them this verbatim. Bob did many things for charity. I don't know if he ever gets credit for that, but he appeared frequently at various charities, just giving of his time. That's what you do, specifically in broadcasting. You're not paid for it. You just do it. And you raise money for very worthwhile charities. So there are two sides to everything. Gary Owens said those words to the authors of the definitive biography on July 14th, 2008. And now Bob does not get credit for his philanthropy work. We didn't even know about it until I got this book. I got the biography. That's when we found out about it. But like I said, good guy, not a monster, not a terrible person. He just had an addiction. And I'm going to, before we wrap up this part of the episode, part two, I'll get very candid with you very briefly. I'm not going to go off into it because this is about Bob. It's not about me. But I do know firsthand what it's like to suffer from an addiction. Mine was to alcohol. And it's funny because I was the one who would never take a drink when I was in my 20s and 30s, my teens. I didn't start drinking until my 40s, believe it or not. And I really had a pretty bad addiction going at one point. I'll just leave it at that. I won't elaborate on it, but it was pretty bad. And one day, my sister was trying to tell me about it, but I didn't listen to her. I thought she was overreacting. One day I was at home alone and literally the voice of God came to me. And he told me, "You have a problem. And it's getting worse." And I began to look at my behavior and look at myself, and I realized I did have a problem. And it was getting worse. So, no, I didn't stop drinking right away, but I did begin to slow up with it. And as of today, I rarely drink. The last time I had a drink was back in December when I went out with some girlfriends for the holidays. And I won't have any alcohol more than likely until my birthday, which rolls around later this spring. So I know how it is to have an addiction and you don't realize what it's doing to you and doing to your life. You don't realize how bad you look. You don't realize how it's making you look, what it's doing to your character and what it's doing to you as a person. So that's one reason why I can empathize with Bob so much, because I've been there. I know how it is to be addicted and you don't even really realize what it's doing to you and how it's affecting you. But we're gonna, like I said, leave it there. We're going to, like I said, go ahead and bring the episode to a close. We will conclude the life of Bob Crane next time. Thank you for joining us for today's episode. Thank you for joining us for all of our episodes. And if you haven't done so already, don't forget to hit that follow button so you won't miss out on any of our episodes we bring to you. Thank you for your time and your support, and we will see you on the next episode.